Welcome to another episode of Her with Amina Brown. And I feel like today is one of those days where I'm kind of like in my feelings a little bit. And I'm going to tell y'all, it's good energy. It's like good things are happening. I know I could be feeling this way because at the time of this recording, we are the day after the inauguration. And do we have a long way to go? Yes, we do here in the States. We have a long way to go. But are we at least slightly less stressed that we have a different administration right now? Yes, we are slightly less stressed. So I'm just going to tell you, you know, it's a lot of things to be worried about. But let's just take in a little bit of like good energy right now. Let's just take in a little bit of like breath of fresh air right now. Okay. Listen, we have a guest in our Her living room today. I want to welcome award-winning, Webby-nominated writer, best known for the satirical Twitter account Honest Toddler and her debut novel, Confessions of a Domestic Failure. Her newest book, Dear God, Honest Prayers to a God Who Listens, is out now. Welcome to the Her Living Room, Bumi Latitan.
Woo! Thank you. Thank you so much, Amina. It is an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Bumi, we need to have like a little talk right now. And the talk is going to be about Black Twitter. I want to start with that because Black Twitter is such a blessing. It just brings a lot. It brings a lot of blessing and also a lot of mess to my life. And the mess is also a blessing because sometimes the mess is like the distraction that I didn't know I needed. It's like people get like wrapped up in some story and I'm like, yes, I want to get on here and find out why this is trending, why this word right here is trending. But I'm going to tell you a subset of Black Twitter that's very important is Black Girl Twitter. Okay, that's like a subset of Black Twitter, of which Bumi and I are a part. And I feel like there's an additional subset based on your industry, right? So I feel like people who are in sort of like the writer, author, sort of speaker, blogger, creative kind of vibes, like that, there is a subset of Black Girl Twitter that's like that. And I feel like that's how Bumi and I are connected. You know, it's like a lot of our mutual friends are also like Black Girl writer, Black Girl author doing those things. So I feel like we're getting to, you know how when you go to like a Black cookout or something like that, and then you're like, you get to sit at the table with somebody while you eat ribs or whatever you do when you're there. And so you and I are sitting at that picnic table today. You know, Black Twitter is a big old, it's like if a cookout and a block party had a baby, that's what Black Twitter is online. So Bumi, you and I are getting to just like grab our own little picnic table out in the park, you know, and while other people are doing the electric slide, we're just here getting to have a little conversation. So thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. So, and I pictured that whole thing. I pictured us with we have our cups, we have our drinks, and we're just going underneath this little like tree. Yes.
Sitting out there, you know, and for my friends that have kids, there's always like we don't have any kids. So if I'm sitting at a thing like that and I'm with a friend who has children, there's also a mix of like, and then girl, I said, hold on. I said, don't eat that anymore. I told you no more. No, go play. Anyway, girl. So then I said, so I feel like that would be happening. Would that be happening? Would that be your vibe?
Yes, times 3,000. Okay, so before I do anything, trying to better myself in my life, trying to like have a career and connect with people, I have a press conference with my children wherein I warn/bribe/threaten them. And I did that today, but we might get a little bit, because they still don't listen. So I might get the youngest one who feels personally attacked when I'm trying to do things, come in here. And at that point, you will hear me be like, what did I say? You know, you might hear a little bit of that voice come out. It's important to know that that's not me. It's just this voice that comes out.
I appreciate the differentiation, and I need to ask a clarification question regarding this press conference, okay? Because my husband and I joke all the time that my mom had a talk she would give not even before we went somewhere, but like right before we went inside. So like, you know, we're driving there, we're listening to whatever music, but like if she puts you in a shopping cart, or, you know, my sister's younger than me, so she put her in a shopping cart and I'm there right before we go in the store, it's like a little moment right there. And it's the same moment that happens if we were going to someone's house. We were never, I feel like the car would have been a good time, but for some reason, maybe she wanted it like first of mind.
Fresh.
When you went in there. So it'd be like right before she rung the doorbell, we're all standing there at the door and it's like this look, and she would say the same three sentences: don't touch nothing, don't break nothing, don't embarrass me. And then she would like ring the doorbell, and in 2 seconds, that person's like, oh, hey, welcome to so-and-so's birthday party. And my sister and I there just looking like afraid to do anything at all. So when you have this press conference with your kids where it's not that you're going someplace, but it's that you got a thing you got to do, what are the expectations? What are you saying to them when you have the meeting?
I'm letting them know, do you like being in a home? Do you like having four walls? Because that costs money. Mm-hmm. Do you like, you know, the food we have? That costs money. So the different things, so mommy has a job. Mommy is a person. I know it might be a shock to everybody in this home, but mommy actually has things going on other than snack time and lunchtime, dinner time. So sometimes I'm going to work. Sometimes I'm going to talk to people. And when I'm going to do those things, I need you to do the things that I told you to do. In this case, it's multiplication drills on YouTube, which I feel like is school. So I need you guys to do that. And then when you're done with that, I said they can go on their devices. But I am unavailable. I am here, but I'm not here. This is a long distance relationship for 1 hour. I need one. And I specify that time. I need 1 hour. And I say that over and over again. And I let them know. Because an important part of the talk is to let them know that if they cross that line, eventually you will be off the phone. You know, there is going to be after the party. We are going to reunite. And depending on how this time goes, that changes how the reuniting will go and what will happen after that. Because they know nothing's going to happen while I'm talking to you here and this is being recorded. But after, you know, how do you want that to be? What face do you want to see? What do you want to happen or not happen?
I need this so bad.
Not too scary, I feel.
I need this so bad because I appreciate you bringing up the reuniting parts because it was like my mom could go from like, don't embarrass me, to that person opening the door. And she's like, hey, we're so happy to see. It was like another somebody is there when she's in a space where other people are there. And there's only so far she intends to go having to get with you in that public space because that falls under the category of embarrassing her. But when those people aren't around, you going to have a time
have left
where you got to be there with her alone. It was like, whatever that is, I don't want it.
You don't want it.
I don't want it.
You don't need it.
Mm-mm.
You don't need it because you know you can go so far when there are other people around because you know there's certain... Your mom has limits what she's willing to do in public. But when you're home and it's just you and her,
okay,
you don't want that.
No, whatever it is, whatever it is.
Nobody wants that.
No. She had a couple of times where I felt like she also would just say things like, and if you don't do this thing I'm saying, and then it was like she would just get quiet right there. Like, I don't even have the fill in the blank of exactly what happens. I just feel like whatever that is, I don't want. But I was an oldest kid. So I was very like, she said this, I don't want that. So I'm not going to do that. Then my sister came along and my sister was like, you know, mom, when you say these things to me, it's really not helpful for effective communication between the two of us. And I feel like there might be some other ways that you could maybe communicate to me your desires about what you want my behavior to be, but this way that you're communicating it's not effective for us. So what's another way we can find? And I'm staring at her like,
shocked.
Why are you talking to her like that? Why are you living? Why are you living?
Scared. Yes, that's a second born thing. See, that is a second born, specifically a second born daughter. I have a theory because I have an older daughter and then I have a middle daughter. The second born daughter, the first daughter is like, you know, together, really like, okay, these are the rules. I don't want to break them. I'm afraid of consequences. Second board is like, okay, so we're coworkers, we're equals. I think we should come up with the rules together because you're not, none of these are working for me. I'm going to be honest with you. None of these are working for me. And I'm not afraid of these, any of these consequences. So I don't know. Can I have a snack? I don't know. That's how the second boards come in. And the first boards are just shocked. Like, I can do this? Like, they can't because they weren't.
No, that's not even
Mm-mm. inside of them. They can't. But they're shocked.
Complete shock. Even to this day, I still look at my sister sometimes. She's talking to my mom like we grown. And I still be looking like, wow, y'all, this is a conversation y'all have? This is allowed? So now it's almost like I'm looking at my mom like, this is allowed? This is allowed because it wasn't allowed when you were raising me. You was on your, no, this is what we're doing.
Right.
Now, my sister comes along. Now you want to have a conversation. Now you want dialogue.
Yeah.
You had no dialogue. It was a monologue. Yeah. It was soliloquy. Get out of here.
All of a sudden you're talking to kids. Okay.
Please. Who even knew?
But it's not personal. It's just because the second boards come out wild. They come out different.
Yeah.
And we're caught off guard because things don't affect them in the same way.
Right.
No, I can give my oldest one a look and she will be like shaking inside. Just a look. My second born, give me a look back. And like, give me a look back.
We got a problem? We got a problem here?
I have to think of something new.
Please. Oh my gosh. Y'all.
I have to escalate. She causes me to like escalate.
First of all, not a child with a personality that makes you have to escalate, because it's like you normally reserve that word for when you're in like a customer service situation and you're like, somebody's got to call the manager. But now you're like, this is my child and you making me escalate and I'm the manager.
I'm the manager. And then you have to act crazy because you can't, you know, in the battle of the wills, I don't know if this is good parenting or not, but like, I feel like someone told me once you have to win every fight until they're three. I don't know if that was good parenting advice or not, but I took it. Okay. I just took it. One time, my second born, so she just was like, kept going. Like, and I had this flash to those moments of those Maury shows where you have the out of control teen, you know, that's where it comes from. I was like, I'm not going to be that mom on that show with the out of control teen talking to me in whatever way. And so she wouldn't do her homework. I said, start it now or I'm going to throw your iPad out of the window into the snow. It was on the second story. I said, start it now or this iPad's going out the window. I don't know. I'd snapped. I'd lost it. So guess where that iPad went? Because she wanted to challenge me. She wanted to see. It went out the window.
What?
All my kids were shook. But did she do her homework? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But my oldest one was horrified. She's like, but it got quiet. She did her homework. I went out later. I got it. Luckily, it still worked. It turned itself off. It was so cold or whatever, but it worked. The waterproof case did its job.
Come on, waterproof case.
But it was different after that because I think she realized, okay, this lady is truly crazy. Because to little kids, the iPad, you know, to children, it's the iPad is life. It is their second parent. It is all of this thing, you know? So when I threw it out the window, it was almost like I threw like a pet out the window, like a dog out the window. So maybe they saw themselves going out the window. I don't know, but it worked. And after that, our relationship totally, well, you know, some people would say it broke. I would say it changed where she kind of respected me more or she's afraid. I don't know. Either way it worked. The homework got done.
I'm just saying. So. Any of you parents listening, if you need to sacrifice that iPad one time, you know,
one time.
Kids don't even understand. They don't even understand how buildings work. I don't care if you tossed it out the window and the window's on the same level as the house. We don't care. If you need to sacrifice that iPad for the people, you do what you
do
need
it.
To do, parents. You do what you need to do to make it.
And I'm glad you said for the people, because it's not just about me. These kids will grow up. You know, the kids on Maury, they grow up. I don't know what they're out doing in the world, not respecting people. You know, I did this for all of us. This is for everybody. This wasn't just for me. This is for you. This was for the whole world. This is for humanity.
Okay.
I threw the iPad out the window for humanity.
For humanity as a service to the world is what we're talking about, people. Yes.
Yes.
Boomy, I'm just... Y'all, when I tell y'all, this was not even what we plan to talk about, but I needed this conversation This is a Her Favorite Things episode, and talking to Boomy is also one of my favorite things, y'all. We could just, I'm sure maybe one day Boomy and I will record an After Dark episode of her with Amina Brown. I need to really figure this out because I have like a few people that I interview on this podcast and I'm like, there are other things that we could have like super inappropriate conversation about that wouldn't maybe like work for this setting, but I need to find a place that you have to have a password to log into it and be like, but if you want to listen to me and Boomy talk about this on the After Dark version of Her, you can listen to us talk about that. Okay, please. So this is a Favorite Things episode. And I want to start by asking you, what is your favorite Black girl hairstyle? This is all of Black girl life. This could be growing up. It could be currently. What's a favorite that you have?
Well, I have locks right now, but my all-time favorite style for me or to see on any other Black girl, braids. And I mean braids with like kinecolon. I'm going to say, you know, like I see things that I never say it. I'm talking about braids with like synthetic 2B or like 1B hair and just like the individuals, mm-hmm. not super, super small. Cause anytime I see someone with like the micro braids, I'm like, I always have to imagine them trying to take them down. Oof. And it ruins it for me. Even if it looks good, I feel like I'm part of that takedown process. I don't know why, but just like those, just individual shiny braids. I love them.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I just went back and rewatched Poetic Justice. And seeing Janet Jackson and Regina King's braids, like there was a scene where like Janet was, I don't remember if she was just, you know how they had a lot of scenes where she was like reflecting and then like her poetry voice was like the voiceover. She pulled one of the braids up and lit that lighter. When I tell you, I think I like left my body for a second. Like I had like a Black girl out of body experience. Like as soon as I heard the click of the lighter, I was like, oh, sis, come on and burn the end of that braid. Yes.
Get it done. Mm. I was more like a dip myself, like to dip them, you know, and just that feeling of your braids freshly done and a little wet, you know, your back's a little wet or whatever. It doesn't matter. And just that, just going home, your braids are done. For the next however months, you're going to try to keep those in. You know, I was really like a 5-6 month person, no matter what. I was like, I'm going to extend this type raggedy person when I was a child, even now. But like, it just felt so good. And whenever I see someone just rocking like those braids, you know, I just feel, I don't know, I feel so proud. I feel so nostalgic. Yeah, I just feel so happy. I feel so happy because there were so many styles that I feel like, especially as a child, that kind of made you not be able to do things, you know, like can't get wet, can't do this. And braids, you could do anything. You could do anything. Put it up in a ponytail, like go live my life, you know? And so it just makes me feel like free and just happy.
That's such a good point. Like I never thought about the ways that like our hairstyles, sort of some of our Black girl hairstyles felt like they were limiting us, but braids sort of ended that. Like even like my mom's frustration of like, we got to go to church, we got to go where we're going to go. And like now I got to do your hair. But when it's braided, it's like everyone's free from that. You can swim, you can go to the water park, you can do whatever it is, sweat, like you can do whatever it is and not be worried. And this is a great segue to my next favorite things question. I want to talk about some particular braids that really gave me the life is when Beyonce released Formation and she was in that car that was doing the circles in the parking lot. And those long braids that now are called lemonade braids. If you go to get your hair braided.
I didn't even know that.
Okay. They are now called lemonade braids. So I don't know what they were before, but they ain't that. Like when you Google now, it's like, do you want these lemonade braids? And she was leaning out of the window of that car and those braids were like cascading down. I was like, this is a life I want to live. I was like,
I know.
It was everything. This leads me to my next thing. Do you have a favorite Beyonce song? And I want to preface this, okay? I don't want to preface this by saying, okay, not every Black girl likes Beyonce. I don't know that many, but not every Black girl likes Beyonce, nor does every Black girl have to like Beyonce. So if I ask this question and you're like, not really my thing, we'll put another artist name there, but talk to me. Do you have a favorite Beyonce song? And if so, what is it?
I do. And I know you mean like not every Black girl has to like Beyonce or da-da-da. But even if for whatever reason, you know, something happened and a Black girl doesn't like Beyonce, something happened. That's so condescending. But whatever. Let's say she has a reason. Let's say she has a valid reason. Her influence is so undeniable and so Black and so, I don't know, it's so undeniable. And her artistry transcends race and transcends even her gender, her artistry, her genius. I'll stop. But okay. The song is Listen.
Okay.
Dreamgirls Listen. And so I'm not going to sing it. I'm not going to make a fool of myself today.
We are here at a microphone. If you need to get that going, Boomy, you just let me know. I might have like a little background vocal if you need it.
Will you come in on
I might come in.
So that's...
Oh, so just let me know if that's what we need. But yes, Listen, what about it makes you love it?
Oh my goodness. I feel like it's my anthem. I would play that song a lot when I was going through a big breakup, a divorce, actually. It's not a big breakup, divorce, but it made me think of just all the times in my life when I've let other people kind of speak for me and define me, and, you know, being defined as a wife or being defined as so-and-so's, you know, my parents' child, being defined as a student or defined as someone from this part of town, even being defined by kind of in religious settings. And those times in life, especially when I was going through my divorce, just, no, I'm me. I'm ready for my voice to be heard. I'm ready to say the things that I've been wanting to say that have been in my heart that I was afraid to say because I would lose the approval of this person or this person. And I just love where she says, like, it's my time to be heard, you know, it's my time to be heard. And the way the song just builds, it just like builds, and she sings stronger and stronger and stronger. I just love that song so much.
Boomy, thank you for bringing that song up, because I'm like, I might have to, now you're making me like, I need to do a re-listen on that song.
Just asking people to listen, asking like this person really to listen, like listen, you know? And I just love it.
I get that now. And I'm even thinking, not that I'm a Beyonce historian, although if there's a job like that, let me know. But even in thinking like, the things that, you know, we don't know a lot about Beyonce's actual life, which I respect too, but the things we know a little bit about that time in her life, I think that was around like that time of Dreamgirls, around the time that she was like separating from her dad as a manager and starting to really carve her own path, which even at that time, I could not have imagined like how broad and amazing her career was going to get. But like thinking about the subject matter of that song and how much that song meant to her at that moment in her life. And like, that's actually very inspiring to think about, that we're all going to go through some times like that, where it's like, okay, I got to step out of whatever people are thinking I should be. I got to step out of that and like, let my full self be heard. And now thinking about all the work she created after that, it's beautiful to see artistically that. So that's really poignant.
It's amazing because, you know, when she says like, I'm not at home in my own home, you know, just talking about, because that's how I felt so often, especially growing up. I didn't feel at home a lot of the time. Just, I couldn't relax in the way that I wanted to a lot of the time. And even like in early marriage, I kind of fell into this role. Okay, I am wife now. And I lost myself in so many things. And just that song, just like emerging from all of these, their comforts, yes, but they're also keeping you like shackled, keeping you in this tight little box. And yes, it's like true. Thinking of what she did after she was brave. And I didn't even realize that it came out the time that she split with her dad as manager, but now it's even braver, because after that, she skyrocketed. She'd already skyrocketed, but then she exploded in what she created and the visual. It's just like, it's insane. It's insane. If I have 1/100th of the bravery that she showed in her career, because you have to understand, being an artist is scary.
Yo.
It's scary. So she is brave to do all the things she has done. She's brave. And if I have 1/100th of her bravery, it's like I can do stuff, you know? I can do stuff that I want to do, not just that people tell me I should do, but that I really want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Beyonce, thank you. We know you're listening to the podcast.
thank you for tuning in.
We appreciate that so much. Anytime you want to come
on.
The
children are well.
You're welcome, Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Anytime. Even Blue Ivy, she would make a great guest too. So, okay. Tell me, do you have right now, because I'm sure this changes all the time, do you right now have a favorite phrase that you love to say?
I like to say teamwork makes the dream work to my kids. And I know it's so annoying when I say it, but I can't stop because I always say it in the context of like, we need to clean the house together. And they're like, we need to do this laundry, we need to fold it and put it away, or we need to all like chip in. Teamwork makes the dream work. And so I'll go, teamwork makes that, and I'll go, dream work.
Ooh, yes. We love a call and response, Boomy. We love to see that.
I love it. But it really is true in life. You can't do a lot by yourself, you know? And I've been kind of a recluse in life, you know, I keep to myself, I disappear for a while. I've started to learn how you really do need to kind of depend on people and lean on people and network with people, not just for the purpose of networking, but to get to know people and know what like makes them keep going, you know, and exchange ideas. So I'm trying to get better at that.
Teamwork makes the dream work, honey. I love that. What's your favorite way to spend time alone? Like if you have a few hours alone, what's the dream of things you would be doing?
First, I love being alone. It's my favorite like state of anything. If everyone, this is a horrible thing to say during pandemic, but if everyone did die tomorrow, I don't mean die because I don't want to look at 100 bodies. Like if everyone disappeared, I'd be okay. It would be a little bit freaky because I don't know how to work the electricity plants and the water purification plants, but I would figure it out. Because I do like kind of, you know, quiet. That's weird. But what was even the question? I don't remember.
If you had a few hours alone, what are your favorite things to do when you're alone? How do you want to spend the time?
I'm back on track. And I just want to say I have ADHD and it's unmedicated. So that's part of it.
I'm tracking.
I love to go on drives by myself and listen to music. I love it.
I love that. Oh, going on a drive. I love that.
It's so fun.
It's sort of, it does feel like you're unto yourself, but you're also like watching the other cars go by.
Yes.
I mean, I have had some wonderful alone time on a road trip or something. I live in Atlanta. So in the before times, I would have to go back and forth to Nashville for business stuff. And it's about like 4-4.5 hour drive. And you could fly, but something about that 4-4.5 hours, I get that. It's like all the podcasts and whatever albums.
Audiobooks.
I love
audiobooks. I love them. They're just art sometimes, you know, when you get a really good reader, someone's voice, and they just know how to do that acting, and they can do the male voice and female voice and little kid voices. Those are hard. Some people nail it. So just listening to audiobooks and driving, music, podcasts, anything, just like feeling the world fly by, and you're in your own little pod with your snacks, maybe with your mocha. Come on.
As soon as you said snacks. Food, I was like, sign me up for that, because that's the best part about a road trip. It's like every time I take a road trip, I got to make a trip specifically for the snacks. I got to get, because certain, I don't know. It's a cross between discovering I had some allergies to things in my 30s and maybe just becoming a bougie person, that some of the snacks I need are not going to be like at the gas station in random blah, blah, blah town that I'm driving by. You know, I need my organic popcorn. But I need the butter to maybe be vegan butter. There's a lot of things that are going on in my snack situation, but I'm always like, let me go to Whole Foods and achieve these organic dark chocolate covered almonds. Yes.
Fancy. I miss Trader Joe's because I'm in Canada now. I miss Trader Joe's. Whole Foods is always, I didn't understand how they did their pricing. I felt like they were robbing me. Are they still doing
probably.
That?
I think that something. Might still be the case, actually. I think that's an accurate description.
Because there were two times when I got to the register and I wanted to put things back because I didn't have enough. Like, this was like 10 years ago. And I'm like, they did something. You know, when you look at your receipt to see where you were wrong and like there was nothing, it was all legitimate. And you just have to kind of sit with yourself.
This is still happening to me going to Whole Foods because now it's like they have like a little like Prime members thing. If you're, you know, a member of Amazon Prime, you're supposed to scan that.
Okay.
And then there's certain things you're supposed to get a discount on. And one of the last times I went up in there, I don't think my husband was with me. I think I was alone because I made her check twice. And I normally wouldn't have done that if he was there because I would be like, I want to embarrass you. You know what I mean? But I was alone and I was like, did this scan? She was like, yes, right. Ma'am, like it's scanned. And I was like, well, why? Like I was pointing to the receipt, like, why is it? And I tried scanning what? It again. Like, is it going to change? She was like, no, this is just what it is. And I was like, this
I
ain't right.
I need to change.
Please. Like, what are you going to do about it? This isn't right. What are you planning to do about it? But I do feel like Trader Joe's and honorable mention for Sprouts. I feel like those two places are a snack haven situation. And they have very, like, I feel like you can go to Whole Foods and, like, there's just general brands or whatever that are there. But I feel like with Trader Joe's, there are particular cookies and particular chips, popcorn things that you can only get when you go to Trader Joe's. I mean, am I right about that?
You're right. It's been 10 years for me. And I still think about Trader Joe's at least 3 times a week because they will have unique things. They're always trying to delight people. I mean, you're sounding like a commercial. I don't even have access to this store.
Trader Joe's executives, we know you're listening. So Boomy's book is coming out, but she's also available. She's also available for sponsorship. So Trader Joe's executives, we're paging you to aisle 5.
Yes.
Please get in touch with Boomy. Okay.
Yes, I'll come. I'll visit.
I love that. Yes. Okay.
Oh, one of their Hawaiian t-shirts and everything. I love Trader Joe's. Just send me snacks. Pay me in snacks. That's all I want. Pay me in all of your new releases.
I am accepting of this. I mean, even you saying like pay me in snacks, like I know we're just really meeting each other, like, you know, air quotes in real life, you know, because we're here, you know, kind of like on the recording, but I'm just going to step out there and have a vulnerable moment and tell you that I wouldn't mind if someone could pay me in hoagies. Like,
yeah.
I'm a sandwich lover and I'm out here in these streets. Like, if the city of Philadelphia in particular wanted to pay me in hoagies for something, it's acceptable. There's really not a lot of other things that I would be like, you know, I don't want to be like paid in beer or pay me right. in bottles of wine. Who cares? Pay right. me in hoagies and we can, you know, work out something.
I understand. I understand because I would be willing to be paid in burritos, carne asada specifically with salsa verde. I have to have salsa verde on the side, not the red salsa.
Okay.
I could be paid in that. No problem. No problem.
It's important to know one's requirements for things. Because there are actually very few moments that I would be like, instead of money, this. But there are a few food items that I'd be like, you know, if I'm at the negotiating table and they're like, turns out we don't have money, but we have, I feel like there's a few foods right there that I'd be like, slide me the contract.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. You did your research and I'm here to say, let's do it.
I feel like I'm Monique Jiff. I would like to see it.
I would like to see it.
What's wrong, Matt? Oh, they have cheesesteaks? I would like to see it. I would like to see the contract for that, please. Okay, tell me about this. What's your favorite trash TV to watch?
Oh, gosh, my favorite trash. Well, I'm one of those people who I don't watch a lot of TV because I don't have channels here. They do exist in Canada, but I don't have a lot of channels. But in terms of what I do like watch to zone out, it's YouTube. And it's so dumb. This qualifies as trash TV because I like to watch, it's very specific, Korean cafe owners prepare drinks.
Yes.
It is a problem. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense. I'm probably never going to go to Korea. I don't even go to cafes that much because I don't like matcha. I don't like the color. It looks bitter. I tried it by accident once. But I love to see them. So you'll have this Korean young lady. All she does is prepare drinks and like prepare cake and cut cake. And I can watch that for hours. So
wow.
Yeah. And the captions are like kind of in broken English. That just makes it better for me. So she prepares all kinds of drinks. It's called like Bless Roll. And she prepares all kinds of drinks, like, oh my gosh, like kiwi smoothies. She makes like ice cream drinks. She makes Americanos. And I'm just sitting there just watching, transfixed. I could watch that for 3-4 hours.
Wow. This is a whole corner of YouTube that I know nothing about. I'm like,
yes.
People are making videos of that process. And I could see how it would be interesting to watch because you kind of feel like you're a little involved in this stranger's day. You're getting a little peek into like their process.
Yes. I feel like I own a cafe, kind of. I mean, do I not?
Obviously.
I feel like after all these hours, we own a cafe. You know, me and her, we both own a cafe. And I feel honestly, I could own a cafe at this point because I've watched so many hours. I know how to do it. I know like where the ice goes on the cup. I know how to pour the Americano, you know, after we put in the water. So I feel like, you know, that I could do this, that we could make this work, her and me, if she ever would like a partner to do this. I love the part where she cuts the different cakes. There's a rainbow cake and she has all the names. There's an Oreo cake, you know, there's like vanilla cake. I make the kids watch it too. And there's like, why are we doing this?
And
it's Saturday.
Okay. And because you already have a strong press release with the kids, I love how you can just go ahead and begin with like, do you like having a home? You can just start right there. Like that beginning line. I mean, you know, as a writer, I'm like into the opening line and that opening line, do you like having a home? I feel like your kids will get used to that. And then after a while, you just say that. You don't even make it to the rest of the press conference. And they're just like, we're going to finish watching this lady cut up this cake. Because apparently.
We did that on Saturday, you know, because we were just watching some videos. And I said, oh, I have an idea for a video. Because they were, you know, the kids want to watch their, like, what is it? This challenge, try not to laugh challenge with all these videos. And Generation Z humor is weird. I don't understand. I don't even laugh at the same things they laugh at. They just see like a cartoon frog going across the screen saying yeet and they laugh. Like, I don't understand it. So I said, oh, I have an idea. Like, let's watch this cafe. And they're just like, why are we doing this? But I'm like, look at her. Look how she's putting the sprinkles on the ice cream. That's cool, right? She's like, no. But I love it. I love it.
Y'all, I'm gonna have to see if Boomy will send us a link to one of her favorites so that we can include it in the show notes because I'm super curious. And I'm also a person who sometimes like has trouble sleeping because my brain's kind of like an administrator a little bit. So I'll wake up sometimes at like 3 or 4 a.m. because my brain's like, let's think about some things we forgot to do today. Like, let's wake up at 4 a.m. and let's think about that. Remember the conversation you had and you were feeling awkward afterwards? Let's take this time to overthink about why that was awkward, you know? So sometimes I need something kind of methodical almost to just watch to like get my brain to stop looping about whatever that is. And this sounds like the perfect thing because it's not like traumatic or like a lot of drama. You're just like, here's a woman there in the cafe telling us about she's cutting up the different cakes. We love to see this task. What? Completed. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Making a pomegranate latte, you know, and putting it in the to-go box for Uber Korea. You know, it's amazing.
I didn't even know I needed this, Boomy, until you brought it up. I need this now. I need this.
I know. The best. It's the best for 4 a.m. It's so relaxing. You can even keep the sound off. I don't even have the sound on half the time. I'll have like rain sounds or something going on and just watching this cafe. And she'll describe like which cake is her favorite. they're still eating Christmas cake for whatever reason. Maybe that's part of the culture. So this like Christmas cake decorated with reindeer.
Wow. Best. Y'all, if y'all don't go to YouTube and check this out, I'm gonna make it my business to find out about this, Bumi. Okay, let me ask you about this. What is your favorite spiritual practice? And I preface this by saying, I feel like there's so much I love about the ways you write about your journey in spirituality and the honesty with which you write, which I think is very central to your book, you know? And I think if you had said the phrase spiritual practice to me 7 years ago, I would have been like, no, we rebuke that. That's not a thing. That's not, no, we're rebuking that. That's not a thing that we're doing now. But I feel like in my journey and, you know, for me having the context of being in Christian faith, I feel like my Christian faith has been like stretched in a lot of ways. It's been broadened way beyond even what I believed as a child, what I believed when I first entered adulthood even, you know, and thinking about there are these different ways to have spiritual practice that may not have to be so regimented or I don't know. I'm still like processing a lot of that. So I was curious to hear your thoughts about that. Do you have a favorite spiritual practice that really grounds you?
Yes. And I know exactly what you mean by 7 years ago, you would have said no, because 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I would have said the same thing. I would have imagined someone saying, oh, this is, and there's nothing wrong with devotionals at all. You know, I have some devotionals, but I would have imagined somebody with their devotional notebook doing their perfect thing. And to me, it would have sounded so boring and constrained, and but they're not. I'm not saying that they are. I'm just saying how I would have reacted to it. But my favorite spiritual practice, this is going to sound strange, but I think it's making myself a cup of tea right now. I'll start to, because I've been so hard on myself most of my life. Like most people, you always kind of think the worst of yourself and think, oh, I messed up on this. You look at your worst moments, highlight reel, and I do that. And then being a mom is like giving, 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 giving. And if you're not careful, you'll just give to the bone marrow and just, you know, collapse. So I love drinking tea. And I have a lot of different teas. I'm not fancy about tea. I like Celestial Seasons. Like I like store brand. I don't care what kind of tea it is. It doesn't have a strong taste anyway. It's just tea, you know, it doesn't have to cost a lot. And so I like fixing myself a cup of tea with honey. I do this multiple times a day and just like holding it. And to me, drinking tea is a way that, not that I prove I have value to myself, but yes, that I matter in this home too. And I'm doing something kind, something that I love, something that feels like a hug for me. And that just, it helps ground me. It helps me feel human, because so many things can kind of take you out of that feeling human. Just like you, a lot of the time we're doing things. We got to do things, do things, do things. But tea is really something, or maybe for some people it's coffee, just makes me stop and just kind of exhale. And so that I think was my favorite. And I also like praying in bed at night, just praying. And when I know when I say praying, I don't know what people imagine, but for me, it's, I just talk to God about, okay, so thanks for just getting me through this day. And, you know, there's another one coming tomorrow, but I know you'll see me through it. So like almost as if I have a friend sitting on the edge of my bed who's been waiting for me and just who is there so I can just unload everything. So those are my two favorite spiritual practices.
I love that, Bumi. And I think this is also a good place for me to ask you to tell my listeners more about your book, because I think this is a great segue, because your book is full of very honest prayers, you know?
Thank you.
And what can people who, and you can tell me if this is true about your book, I'll tell you like the vibes that I was getting. I feel like people who may sort of feel like they're on the fringes of faith sometimes, who may feel like, you know, in other, you know, they may read other things and feel like, that's not me. That doesn't fit me. That's not my thing. I feel like they may find themselves in the way that you've written this book, because it is written in this very open-handed way for people. So if somebody's listening and they're like, not too sure maybe how they feel about prayer or about what that could look like what would you say to them about what your book is like or the inspiration behind writing it?
Oh, thank you for saying all of that. I feel like I wrote this book from as I was living it, you know, and as I was, because I just kind of recently, I would say I started praying and talking to God and then came to faith in Jesus. Like, that's all really recent for me, like past 2-3 years. It's been a journey, because even when I believe something, I can believe it, but then I have to feel it too. Sure. And I can wrap my whole self around it. And so I wrote this book as I was learning to trust God. I wrote this book as I was learning to trust in his goodness, because that's a whole nother thing. Sure. You know, depending on what you've been through in life and maybe even the religious people or churches or whatever you've been to, you can have pain in what it means to even believe in God. So I was learning to pray. I was learning to talk to him, and to trust him, to trust that he wants good things for me, for anyone. And as I was doing this, I felt him teaching me too, and teaching me so gently, which is the only way I think you can really teach, maybe, just teaching me so gently. And really, I think the most important part was that he was revealing himself as a father to me, a loving father, because it's one thing to think of a God who's in charge and has power, but why would we really want to communicate with, okay, this all-powerful being? Okay, he's powerful. Maybe we would communicate to get stuff, but him as a loving father, this loving deity who cares about his children, I wanted to talk to because it comforted me. He comforted mm-hmm. me. He comforts me and he loves me. And so it goes from, that took it from like this religion to this really real relationship. And so I wrote it from the person at the beginning of a relationship who's not even sure that they're safe, but knows that they want to be there.
That's powerful, Bumi. That's powerful.
Oh, thank you.
And I think, you know, other things that Bumi and I can talk about on our next episode, but I think, and especially when I'm on this podcast, I mean, people who've been listening a while know that, you know, I grew up Christian. I'm still Christian, even as the bounds of that are different for me now. But I love to talk about spirituality on this podcast, because I think whether people find that in a particular religion or whatever their journey is there, we're all yearning for something that feeds our soul, that reminds us, you know, that we're human, that we're here, that it's important that we're here. And as a person who is a Christian, I love for there to be things that are available to people who may not feel like they're the most devout anything. You know, they may not feel like they're the one that has all the theology information. They just may be curious, or they may be, you know, in a place where they have questions and they want to be able to know what they do with those questions or whatever. And so I think it's great that you're writing things that are creating that space for people. So Bumi, I could just talk to you about a thousand things. Y'all understand? We going now, but it doesn't mean there wasn't another 2 hours of things that we could have talked about, okay?
Because this flew by, because I could talk to you about so many things for a long time. You're fun to talk to.
So we're going to do that offline. Y'all can't be a part of it. But Bumi and I will talk in a off the record and say the words that we couldn't say on here. But Bumi, thank you so much for joining me in the Her Living Room. Y'all, I hope you enjoyed getting to hear from Bumi. And if you don't have it already, make sure you go to your favorite bookseller and get a copy of Dear God, Honest Prayers to a God Who Listens. Make sure you do that. Thanks, Bumi, for joining me. I hope y'all got as much joy from my conversation with Bumi as I did. You can follow Bumi on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Honest Toddler. And you can check out her website. That's BumiLatitan.com. That's B-U-N-M-I. LADITAN, BoomiLadittan.com. Make sure you grab a copy of her latest book, Dear God, Honest Prayers to a God Who Listens, from your favorite bookseller. Do it now. Do it today. Get a bunch of copies. For this week's edition of Give Her a Crown, I want to shout out Dr. Renita Weems. Dr. Weems is a biblical scholar, academic administrator, writer, ordained minister, and a public intellectual whose scholarly insights center modern faith, biblical texts, and the role of spirituality in our everyday lives. I made a decision last year that for a while I would focus my reading on Christian spirituality in texts written by Black women only. And this journey led me to Dr. Weems' book, Listening for God, A Minister's Journey Through Silence and Doubt. Her book arrived to me right on time as I was shuffling through my own doubts and questions, and I wanted to read to you all one of my favorite quotes from the book. If God was going to speak to me, God would just have to do it amidst the clutter of family, the noise of pots and pans, the din of a hungry toddler screaming from the back seat during rush hour traffic, and the hassles of the workplace. Women have for centuries been made to feel guilty because in our ongoing struggle to balance solitude and intimacy, we found ourselves, often for reasons not always of our doing, having to give up the former for the sake of the latter. While I agree completely with those who argue that solitude and quiet are necessary conditions for replenishing the soul and the psyche, and that prayer thrives on stillness before God, the greatest challenge for me as a minister and a mother was to stop always blaming myself and feeling guilty. The lesson was learning how to hear God in different ways and in different places, which in my case meant in the noisiness of my life and in the seasons of divine silence when God seemed withdrawn and distant. Y'all, to all of you listening, whether you have a spiritual practice, a religion or religious background, or if you do not ascribe to any particular religion or spiritual practice, I just want you to know that this podcast, our, her living room, is a welcome and worn couch. It's a wide table where we can bring our doubts, our prayers, our laughter, our questions, our cuss words, our breath, and be present in the silence or the noise of wherever we are. I hope you can take a deep breath today and feel your lungs fill with gratitude the same way that mine do whenever I'm here speaking to you. Thank you, Dr. Renita Weems, for inviting us to consider our spirituality differently, for inviting us not to a life of guilt and shame, but to a life of freedom, of questions, of doubts, as we explore our own spirituality. Dr. Renita Weems, give her a crown. Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions, as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.